Support for WMNF comes from our members and Frog Song Organics. Each week, Frog Song Organics delivers healthy produce and pasture-raised meats directly to homes and businesses in the Tampa Bay area. More at frogsongorganics.com, featuring seasonal crops, online shopping, and CSA. Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Dr. Fred Harvey, who's on the phone with us from Sarasota. And Fred will be taking your calls and commenting about some of the medical news that's going on. Fred, how are you?
Doing well. Rob, how are you today?
I'm fine. So, did you have a good weekend?
I did. I really did notice on my weekend walks in the woods, I played some disc golf here at Lakeview Park in Sarasota, and lots of oaks are up, and they're shedding those pollens everywhere. I sent you the five-day pollen forecast for the area, and it's over 10. We've got so many trees blooming. If people are sensitive to oak, cedar, we got pine, mangoes, so many things blooming. I'm feeling it. I'm a little rough this morning in the voice.
Oh, boy. So what do you do to diminish the effects of pollen?
There's lots of things, actually, we can do naturally before we even get into the pharmaceuticals. First things first, minimize the constant exposure. So do a neti pot or a nasal rinse with a cup of bicarbonated saline. Easy to make up. You get distilled water or boiled water. So you don't get bacteria in it. And in one cup of water, you mix in a half a teaspoon of a blend that is two parts sea salt, one part baking soda. And that blend is perfect for breaking up the mucus and cleaning out the pollen that's stuck there, continuing to irritate. So if you do a rinse like that once a day and then follow it with some homeopathic nasal spray like Clear Life or something like that, and then take some stinging nettles. Stinging nettle extract, excellent for calming down allergies. It's very interesting because stinging nettle leaves, when you touch them, you get a really significant allergic reaction to your skin. But when you grind it and turn it into an extract, ingest it, it actually reduces allergies. And another thing that's really helpful that also helps to prevent severe viruses is quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. 500 milligrams of that a couple times a day stabilizes the mast cells, M-A-S-T cells, that release histamine and cause the stuffy, runny, sneezy nose. So there's some really good things out there available for us to get some help with.
So, Fred, I'm wondering, you were in the woods, and of course you're going to be exposed to the pollen that's out there. Probably a good idea to stay away from the oak and the pine and the mangoes and everything else that's blooming right now. Good day to go to the beach, I would guess, if you want to be outdoors but you want to stay away from the pollen. Also, checking our air conditioning filters. Should we be checking our filters? I mean, what impact does staying indoors? Do our filters normally take out the pollen from the air that we breathe in?
Right. So this season, you probably want to, you know, for these days, you probably want to keep your windows closed, even though it's been really nice out, because the more you open them, the more pollen gets in, and your air filters are really important, sure. So you may even need to change it more than monthly during these couple of spring months where it's really, really burgeoning. And it's tough to avoid. I go on a walk every morning in my neighborhood, and there's oaks and mangoes everywhere. It's wonderful to see them blooming, but tough to avoid.
Well, Dr. Fred Harvey is here, and he's going to take your questions in a moment about health and nutrition. And when we do that, the number is 813-239-9663. And you can also email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. I see, Fred, we've already got a question in. But you also want to talk about this a study that came out last month in the British Medical Journal about the excess deaths in the U.S. Under President Trump. I know Democracy Now! Did a segment about this a few weeks ago. Tell us, what did the Lancet study say?
So the Lancet did a really interesting public health study. And, the Lancet is one of the most widely read medical publications on the planet. It's very well respected. And they did a really deep dive into what's wrong with America's health system. And it goes years back. This is not Trump. But Trump did significantly worsen the problems that were already there that came from our insistence in this country on an Ayn Randian way of looking at things, where it's dog eat dog, everybody out for themselves, rather than using, compassion and social concepts to lift all of America up. We have the wealth and income equality, the racism, which goes through structurally to social services, to health services. The 10 years of continuous trying to destroy the Affordable Care Act, which ensured 30 million more people that didn't have access. And all this points right to, the COVID-19 pandemic is much worse because people were more ill than they needed to be to begin with. If you're in better health, then you don't have as much problem with the pandemic. So this pointed out lots of things that Trump had done, and there's a list of 20 things that he did and 20 things that were there beforehand, and things that Biden needs to do and the current administration and Congress need to do. And they're already doing it. Part of it is the COVID-19 relief bill, which has been already criticized as saying it's not COVID relief because it's including things like, the minimum wage is obviously going to get nixed, but they've done about five things in here to make the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, work better so that people can get better care and maybe prevent severe COVID or other severe illnesses in the future, because much of what happens to people is that they're too ill to survive a mild illness. And so there's so much we can do here. And fortunately, this COVID relief plan is really a fix for the ACA, too. It was fortunate they were able to do this because there's been so much dismantling of it over years. It could work so much better.
Hmm. I went back and looked at the study, which came out last month, and one item jumped out at me, that 40% of COVID-19-related deaths in the U.S. could have been prevented had the U.S. had the same COVID death rates as those of other group of seven countries. And those countries are Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United Kingdom. If we had the same kind of healthcare system that they had in those countries, 40% of our COVID-19-related deaths could have been prevented.
So that's just what's changing the system. Think about how many fewer we could have had if we had a leader that actually talked positively about the nation coming together to prevent this rather than dithering and dallying and lying. We probably would have had 80% fewer deaths. Because look at Japan. They have a third of our population, and they're working on, 2,000 cases a day, and we do 300,000 cases a day. I know it's down from there, but still, the difference is just shocking.
Hmm. Well, again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And the study also makes an argument that we were seeing more people covered by health insurance under Obamacare, and that suddenly made a turnaround during the Trump years.
Yes, he did try to inhibit that.
All right. So do you want to take some phone calls from listeners?
Let's do that.
All right. Again, this is the Health and Nutrition Program with Dr. Fred Harvey. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Barb in Sarasota writes, I'm a healthy 63-year-old woman. I don't take any medication except glaucoma drops. I do have low blood pressure and a prolapsed mitral valve. And I'm allergic to penicillin, sulfa drugs, Vicodin, and Percocet. I also read a study that said that people with heart valve problems have a higher risk of dying from COVID-19. But in your opinion, with all of the above, is it safe for me to take the COVID-19 vaccine, or would it be better if I did not take it? And she says, thanks for all you do.
You're so welcome, Barb. Mitral valve prolapse is not a very serious or significant valvular problem. It's basically a little bit of a floppy valve. It's not that it's terribly leaky, so the risk for that is very low. There's almost no known health consequences. There's really, from what I've seen so far, no relation between taking any kind of immune stimulant like a vaccine and having problems with the microbial prolapse or glaucoma or low blood pressure. So I think that it sounds like, from what you said, there's no increased risk for you to take this intervention. When it's available, use your gut and take it if you think it's appropriate for you at this time. It doesn't sound like there's any added risk.
Well, let's take some calls from listeners. And if you want to call in and talk with Dr. Fred Harvey directly, you can call us at 813-239-9663. Let's go to Marianne in Seminole. Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
Hi.
Good morning, Dr. Harvey.
Good morning, Marianne.
What would you recommend the dose of vitamin E?
A dose of vitamin E?
Yes, I'm taking 1,000 IU every other day. I thought it was a lot.
Actually, most of the standalone vitamin E's that I see are 200 or 400 milligrams. So if you're doing 1,000 every other day, it's in the same ballpark.
The milligram is 670, but the IU is 1,000.
Okay. Honestly, I don't think it's a very high dose if you're doing it every other day. I use vitamin E less frequently than I did in the past for clients. I usually just use what's in a multivitamin because there's so many other ways to get vitamin E. And if I'm going to use it, I use mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols, the blended, not just straight up alpha tocopherol. A blended vitamin E is very good, and 400 to 1,000 is not a big dose for most people.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Marianne. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Now, Linda writes in to say, I have really awful allergies, and I just want to claw my eyes out. I wash them morning and night, and I use eye drops for allergies, but it doesn't clear up totally. Is there anything else holistically I can do, writes Linda.
Linda, that's a great question. We're in that season. So, yeah, I would clean out my whole head with the neti pot to rinse out the sinuses, too, because they're affecting the eyes. I'd also consider there's an eye drop, a homeopathic eye drop called Similisin, S-I-M-I-L-I-S-I-N, and that one seems to be good for ocular allergies. But you may be at a point where even with taking a full dose of an allergy blend that has the stinging nettles and quercetin and vitamin C and things like that in it, you still may need some extra help. And in the high pollen times, I sometimes actually take a pharmaceutical antihistamine like Zyrtec or Allegra. And if it's really bad, may even need to use some steroid nasal drops like your sprays like Flonase or something like that. Usually the natural stuff keeps me from going to that level.
Okay. Well, this is unusual. We have an open line, and usually we don't have an open line at about this time. So if you've been holding on to your question for a few months and haven't had a chance to call it in right now at 813-239-9663. Scott sends this email in. He says, the most basic difference between the COVID vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson is an adenovirus vector vaccine, while the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are both mRNA vaccines. What is the main difference between an mRNA vaccine and this Johnson & Johnson one being put out this week? In your opinion, if a person isn't used to medicines and flu shots, might the Johnson & Johnson vaccine be the better one to get, writes Scott.
Okay, so, Scott, it's really a good question. There's a lot of confusion about what these are, and all four of the current interventions that are being talked about, Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca is not here yet, I think, but it's close. They're all mRNA interventions. So the Pfizer and Moderna wrap the mRNA in a globule of fat. And So these are little fat packets that deliver the mRNA to the cells. What happens is our cells eat up little fat packets, and then they start producing what the mRNA is telling them to produce as far as protein. And the AstraZeneca is a monkey virus that's been altered in the lab to be able to get into the human body but not infect us per se, but able to inject mRNA into our cells just like a virus would normally do so with its own protein matrix, and then make our body make the mRNA protein, which is the COVID spike protein. The Johnson & Johnson is not a monkey virus. It's a human cold virus, adenovirus, and that one has been also attenuated in the lab so it doesn't give us a cold, but it gives us mRNA that contains the COVID-19 spike protein. So all four of the current vaccines usurp our intracellular machinery. They inject our cells with mRNA from the coronavirus SARS-CoV-2, and that mRNA is a signal. It's like a computer punch card that fits into the computer in the cell called the ribosome, and as the punch card and the ribosome get together, they use amino acids and create protein, COVID spike protein. So this is happening in all four of those currently talked about interventions. Soon, I just read that the Novavax released phase 3 data. They're at 90% efficacy. Novavax makes a COVID spike protein outside the body in a lab, and then uses that COVID spike protein to elicit an immune response. It doesn't make it in our body, inside of our cells. It's just a small amount of protein that goes in the shoulder. That, for me, at this point, seems to have the least likelihood of chronic immune possibilities and problems. And it seems to be 90% effective. So lowest adverse long-term consequence in my mind currently, because it's the standard vaccine like we've used for 50 years, as opposed to the novel mRNA tool.
All right. And Scott's question was, if you're not used to medicines and flu shots, would the J&J vaccine be the better one to get?
I'm looking at Novavax myself.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Bob in St. Petersburg with the next phone call. Hey, Bob, you're on the Health and Nutrition Program.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my
good
call.
Morning.
Last week, Thursday, I broke some ribs. They're really sore. I've talked to some people, and one said I should start taking collagen while they're healing. Can you recommend anything that might make the healing go quicker?
Oh, that's a great question, Bob. I would avoid non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil and Aleve because they interfere with the production of the prostaglandins that signal how your bone's going to repair. So doing more natural painkillers like curcumin, boswellia extract, white willow extract, they all have properties that don't shut down those systems. To help it heal faster, orthosilicic acid, over-the-counter Biosil, is something that stimulates your body to make its own collagen, which is actually what's required in this situation. Collagen is a good protein source, but if you eat half of your body weight in grams of protein per day, you're really getting a lot of protein that supports bone healing. And so, if you weigh 100 pounds, you need 50 grams of protein. If you weigh 150, you need 75 grams of protein. That really promotes bone healing. And just your good general multivitamin helps to support all those enzyme activities that support the bone healing, too. So orthosilicic acid, protein, key things. White willow bark extract, curcumin, boswellia, great painkillers. You might want to take some protease enzymes like Wobenzyme or another protease that helps to chew up the debris around the area so it heals faster, too. Those can all work.
Well, thank you. I'm already on pain meds for back issues. So,
okay. Those other things may help with
pain.
Even more.
Yeah, it's an increase in pain, though, so I'm trying to stay a little inactive. But did you say that was Biosil, B-I?
O-S-I-L.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Bob. Good luck. Good luck to you. Let's go to Ann in Tampa. Ann, you're on with Dr. Fred Harvey.
Thank you. Good morning. I was wondering if you could comment on which food and vitamin combinations or supplement combinations might maximize or minimize absorption and maybe even time of day. I've seen some things from time to time that suggest that it's more helpful to take milk thistle at night, and I've seen some things that talk about some fats being taken in combination with amino acids that are helpful. But any of the general reminders that might help us take things more in a better manner that you advise or that you've come across?
I think that's a great question, and I've heard lots of iterations of it and lots of suggestions about how to deal with it. And I think after doing this for 30 years, one of the key ingredients here is make it as easy as possible for the person to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
The more complex the program, the less likely it's going to happen. And so, though I do know that some people do benefit from food combining things, like if it's fruit, eat it alone, that kind of thing. I personally don't do a lot of that because it makes lives for most people so complex that they won't then follow through. So I ended up looking at absorption this way. All of the vitamins that I take came from food. So I look at them as food. And when I'm taking specifically just boosting nutritional supplements, I eat them with a meal. If it's a probiotic, I eat it with a meal because probiotics in our past have always come with food. They've never been on an empty stomach because they always came in fermented food. I take things that I want to get into my liver, I take those usually before I eat. If it's an enzyme or something to do with digestion or liver, before I eat. And then if it's something for my brain, I take it after I eat because I don't really want it to go through first pass nutrition in the liver first time. So there's a little bit of that. Amino acids tend to be best on an empty stomach because amino acids have specific uptake mechanisms in the blood-brain barrier and in the gut. And so it really helps to, if you want specific brain-targeted amino acids, you want them on an empty stomach as well. Certain things are good at bedtime, like obviously melatonin. And you might want to take magnesium at bedtime because it helps you sleep a little bit more. Other than that, I tend not to do too much other complex combining instructions.
Okay, that's great. As long as it's rational, and as long as I'm not bothering to take a supplement but blocking the effects of it, that was all I was wanting to know. Thank you.
All right.
Very welcome.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you. Well, you're listening to the Health and Nutrition Program on WMNF 88.5 FM. It's on only every other Monday. So this is your lucky Monday if you're a big fan of this program, and I know many people are. So Fred is here, Dr. Fred Harvey, and let's go to Pete in Seminole. Pete, you're on. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Let's talk about a subject that probably everybody experiences and deals with it in their own way. Earwax. So I had it a few years ago, made an appointment. The doctor sent me to another doctor up in Palm Harbor, hooked up a little hose, sucked it all out. Woohoo! That worked pretty good. Well, I had it again, and I'm like totally bombarded with all these recipes from hydrogen peroxide in there to alcohol, rubbing alcohol. I'm not talking Grey Goose either, just rubbing alcohol. Then I finally got some drops that, I forget what it starts with, but it dissolves the wax. So I finally got rid of it after months. My question to you, I'll take the answer off the air too, is hydrogen peroxide good or bad? Use alcohol, have it treated regularly with those drops that you can get at the drugstore. What is your recommendation to handle earwax or people that currently have earwax? Thanks so much.
You're so welcome, Pete. And that was the most detailed description of how to deal with the earwax. You've done a better job than me, I think. But in any event, hydrogen peroxide in the bottle you buy at the health food or at the drugstore
is not going to be the best for that because wax is wax and the hydroxide is water. You can get these drops, I think, murine, you know, the eye drop people, murine makes one. I think another company makes one. It's called Debrox, D-E-B-R-O-X. It's an oily peroxide, and it gets into that wax and dissolves it. And murine has an earwax system. It has a little bulb syringe in it to help squirt out the wax once it's dissolved. Some people make dry wax. Some people make sticky, really wet wax. The sticky stuff practically needs an ear, nose, and throat doctor to suck it up because it's really difficult. And then the dry stuff usually will rinse out pretty easily with that murine system. So I would stick with more of the professional-oriented ones because they work so much better. Even ear candling can work. It's a really interesting ancient technique that puts a little bit of gentle suction on the canal using a tube that, frankly, it looks like a candle and you light it. Google it sometime. It's a really interesting technique. I've never tried it, but I actually have witnessed the results, and it's worked pretty nicely. I'd really recommend sticking, though, with the murine earwax system or one of those kind of things. They're much easier.
All right. Well, the next question comes from Brad. Brad writes, my general practitioner has advised that I have low T, and he encourages me to take maca. Any downside to taking maca?
There is none that I know of. So low T is an interesting issue right now. A lot of people are advertising about it. Low T isn't always low T per se. So testosterone, there's ranges, reference ranges for what would be considered adequate testosterone. If it's in the lower part of the reference range, some doctors think that that's too low and call it low T and treat with added testosterone. And some will only do it if the testosterone is outside the laboratory reference range. Either approach has its own pros and cons, but the way I look at it is if you are actually making testosterone, and if you're outside the reference range, but, you know, just a little bit, I mean, if you're making no testosterone, your testicles are probably not working. But if you're in the range where you're, you know, 5% below the reference, at that point, it's probably worth looking at why. And the HIM study looked at health issues in men that were related to low testosterone. They found that men that have obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and sleep apnea all have lower testosterone. And it doesn't mean the testicles aren't working. It means the body's sick and it's unwilling to put energy into making testosterone because it's so sick that reproduction is not in the body's idea at that point. So things that change that are to go on a diet that helps reduce your weight, control the sugar. They've shown that squats and lunges actually done regularly will increase your testosterone level naturally, probably because you get more blood flow to the prostate and to the testicles by doing squats and lunges. Just doing regular exercise is really important in raising it. And then clearing away toxins. I mean, if you're using fragrances that have xenoestrogens, that means foreign synthetic estrogen-like compounds, xenobiotics, they interfere with your own hormone production. And if you don't sleep, your cortisol can be off, and if you have gluten sensitivity, your thyroid can be off, and all these things can throw off your testosterone. So before embarking on just taking maca, because there are no magic bullets for treating low T, it's a full lifestyle program, you really ought to look into the other parts of it. But maca is safe and may help. I just can't say it's going to do a lot.
All right. Well, this is the Health and Nutrition Program on 88.5 FM. And let's go to Nicole in Tampa. Hi, Nicole. You're on with Dr. Fred Harvey.
Hello, Dr. Fred Harvey.
Good morning.
My husband suffers from cluster headache. And
oh, no.
We've done some research, and we have an oxygen machine that helps a little bit. And we've tried, I believe it's called triptan medication. But none of them really seems to give them relief. I was wondering if there's anything else that we can try.
Have you had food sensitivity testing done? I'm sorry?
Oh, sorry?
Has your husband had food sensitivity done?
No, he has not.
So there's a lot of things that come into triggering cluster/migraine. They're very similar. They're vascular active headaches. Inflammation has a big part to do with it. So it's really important to look for inflammatory causes and look for inflammation in the body. I think that food sensitivity testing is a really good thing. Or in the absence of that, just going gluten-free, dairy-free, and egg-free for 2 months might show you that there's some triggers there.
Okay.
I'd say pursue something like that. Get an inflammation workup done and make sure that he's using magnesium B6 to help with vascular tone.
Okay. And it does seem to be like a seasonal thing. Like he didn't have it for a while and all of a sudden it comes back. So you think it might be like something related to allergies as well?
Like yeah. So get allergy testing done too, because it could be airborne allergies.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Nicole.
Sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing. I apologize. But yeah, so do a food sensitivity and do some allergy testing.
Yeah, I would look in for other kinds of triggers, especially since you're saying it's seasonal. It makes sense to look for airborne allergies.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate all your advice.
Thank you. Hope that helps. All right.
All right. It does. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Anonymous writes, I was recently diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, PTSD, and most likely autism spectrum. I wasn't especially surprised. I need to make a decision on my medication. Any effective supplements for addressing ADHD, which has impacted my whole life, writes Anonymous.
That's a great question. Yes, there are numerous ways to look at this. And again, anything that triggers the brain to be agitated is going to make this worse. There is probably some hard wiring that sets the person up for these kinds of symptoms. But there's environmental triggers, like we were talking about environmental allergies, food allergies. Or sensitivities will raise histamine, and histamine then raises adrenaline, and adrenaline makes you more ADHD. And so if we can clean up all these sources of irritation and get the system to balance, you will need less medication. For example, if you have dietary influences and genetic influences that alter your amino acids, ability to be converted into certain neurotransmitters, you may find that the brain is not working as well. There's a great book by a doctor, there's two actually doctors that have written some extensively on this, Dr. Amen, Daniel Amen, A-M-E-N, and I can't tell you specifically his books, but he talks about how there's another way of looking at these kind of dysfunctions, and Kelly Brogan wrote a book called A Mind of Your Own. She's a psychiatrist who took all of her patients off of the medications and worked with them nutritionally and lifestyle with supplementation for 2 years. To finally get everybody stabilized again off of psychotropic medication. So it's possible, and it just takes a lot of work, and a functional medicine consultation would be a really good place to start, because functional medicine doctors look deep, look broad. They try to find why this is all happening and not just cover up what's happening.
Let's go back to the phones on our health and nutrition program. And Fred, thanks for volunteering to offer all this great information to our listeners. It's always great to have you on the program. Let's go to Lizzie in Clearwater. Lizzie, you're on with Dr. Fred Harvey.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Dr.
Hello.
Harvey, for taking my call. I have bursitis, and I wonder what you suggest or recommend to deal with this. And I would also like to know if it's somehow I have a trigger finger on the same right arm. Is this somehow related? Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Lizzie. And that is a really astute observation. Yes, when you have musculoskeletal things happening on the same side of the body, it's likely due to the same repetitive use injury. So the first thing to do when you have bursitis or tendonitis, things like that, you need to look at your activities and find out what is the injurious activity. Maybe it's not going to be obvious, because sometimes the body is a little out of alignment. And when you're out of alignment, you use the body in a wrong methodology without really even noticing that. So first we have to look for the activity, and then in the meantime, look for somebody to help you get the body actually more reoriented, like a good chiropractor or one of my favorite personal training techniques, muscle activation technique. There's a couple of people in the Tampa area that do that, and there's one here in Sarasota. I found it very helpful for me to actually resolve two rotator cuff injuries. In addition, though, to the physical stuff, class 4 laser, class 4 hot laser is really good at reducing inflammation in a bursitis or a tendonitis. But then we have oral stuff, too. High dose of fish oil, you want to get 3,000 milligrams of the omega-3 fat, the EPA and DHA, not the fish oil, but 3,000 of the omegas, and curcumin, boswellia, white willow extract, very good anti-inflammatories. And with tendon issues and bursitis issues, there is a supplement called Synovix, S-Y-N-O-V-X, tendon and ligament. It has been shown in clinical studies to actually help to reorganize and heal damaged tendons. Really good stuff.
Okay. Lizzie, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Very interesting and informative program. We listen every week.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Every other week. Thank you, Lizzie. Great to hear from you. And, Fred, we've gotten a bunch of emails and a bunch of phone calls waiting in the wings. The next email comes from Gene. Gene writes, what does the good nutritionalist think about OsteoBioFlex for joint health? Does that huge, chalky pill leave residual buildup in your kidneys or your liver?
Well, OsteoBioFlex, if I remember, is a calcium. Let's see if I can pull it up here. OsteoBioFlex. It's for glucosamine and some other things. It's got boswellia serrata extract, 5-lutein. So that's really good. It's got some chondroitin, MSM. It's actually really just a protein kind of thing. It's got the chondroitin, MSM, and collagen, which are all protein sulfur-related for healing joints, the glucosamine, and some anti-inflammatory. No, it's actually not a bad combination.
All right. There you go. Let's go to Liz in Spring Hill, who's been holding the longest. Liz, thanks for calling into the Health and Nutrition Program.
Good morning.
Hi, Liz.
I've been a listener supporter of this program on this station for a long time, and I want to talk more about the doctor's vaccine hesitancy. And what I want to know is, do you realize that you are contributing to our community's vaccine hesitancy because of a lot of the statements that you're making on this, on the air, about how you're not taking the vaccine and how you won't even call it a vaccine, which the definition in the dictionary of a vaccine is any agent put into the body to, you know, facilitate an immune response. And these long-term immune scary things that you're worried about, because this is important and people are listening to you. Number one, my daughter is using it as fodder and proof that she's not going to get the vaccine. I'm not happy about this. I have received both of my doses of Moderna vaccine as a healthcare practitioner, a community practitioner, and I'm upset about this, actually, because it's purveying more vaccine hesitancy into our community. And I'd like to hear exactly. Don't skirt around it and say, oh, well, if it's good for you or if you feel it's good for your body, that's skirting around the whole issue. And you're sowing doubt in people's minds. And
well, Liz, we understand where you're coming from. Let's get to the doctor's perspective for a second, okay? Thank you.
Yes. I understand that you're upset about this. I understand you're upset about the whole process. I am too, which is why I spend my time giving accurate information about what's actually going on. This is real. And these are novel agents.
every prior medical intervention has been studied for years prior to FDA approval. This got months. The fact that Operation Warp Speed cut off the preclinical time for development is amazing. They did preclinical 7 years worth of work in about 3 weeks. It was pretty shocking. But they already had a platform for these mRNA things based on the SARS-CoV-1 prior work. We have used mRNA in humans previously only to create human proteins in human cells. The likelihood of a chronic autoimmune problem is much lower because it's a human protein. We are creating a foreign protein in human cells using mRNA. This has never been done in humans previously. It was released after 3 months of initial, it's not killing people, testing. So my statements have been basically, we don't know what long-term events are going to be for this. Pfizer has said that it will not have finished collecting data until the end of 2022. Therefore, it's not likely we will see published data until 2023. I have never been an early adapter of medical interventions. I like them, but when they are finally vetted by other third-party independent review, and then I will adopt them. I don't adopt experiments that are being portrayed as not experiments. Pfizer is still collecting its initial 3 years of data. Remember that.
So, Fred, are you telling people, let me ask you this, Fred, are you telling people not to take the vaccine?
I have never said that. And I think you've heard me say, Rob, that I have questions about the mRNA intervention. I have already taken my standard protein flu block flu vaccine. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I simply have questions about the way this was done and the speed with which it was foisted upon the public. Posting questions is not telling people not to take it. What it's doing is providing informed consent. Because if people are informed, they may or may not consent, but they've at least been informed. And we haven't yet talked about the fact that there are at least 100 times the death rate for this vaccine compared to the flu vaccine. There were 0.042 people dying from the flu vaccine in 2019, whereas there's already been over 700 dead from this vaccine. It's about a 10-fold to 100-fold increase in death. 35 per million and 0.42 per million for flu.
But
that's
Fred,
significant.
All right, it's unfortunate because I think we could veer the whole show off. But where are you getting your numbers from? Because as you said,
CDC,
the CDC is reporting in real time.
Vaccine adverse events reporting system, from the United States government.
All right, so I got to say, I took the vaccine, my first shot on Thursday, and I took the Pfizer vaccine in part because I'm around people a lot, so I feel like, you know, I've got to do that. I got to say, my big problem with the vaccine is I got my shot at the University Square Mall, and there were still thousands of cars in line waiting for hours last Thursday to get the vaccine. And I think the distribution system is all screwed up. And
I saw
people with older cars whose cars overheated in line. And the person, I don't know if the person whose car overheated in front of me ever got the vaccine.
There you have evidence. Yeah. You have evidence for the Lancet argument that America's health system was trashed before Trump got here. They have destroyed public health in this country over the last 20 years. We don't have a system to do the right thing. A national health system might be able to distribute the vaccine, but we've got this crazy, non-systematic, state-oriented, cut-up, absolutely abysmal non-system that hurts public health.
And we might have 40% fewer COVID-19 related deaths compared to the other industrialized nations. Fred, if you don't mind, I'm going to go on, and I would go back please. To Liz. I would go back to Liz and give her a chance to respond, but she dropped off voluntarily, and I did not cut her off. Let's go to John in St. Petersburg, and we're hoping to steer back to more health and nutrition. And, John, you're on with Dr. Fred Harvey. What's your question?
Well, I just want to make a statement. When I was young, I had cluster headaches, like the young lady that just called in about her husband. And I suffered with them for about 10 years. And miraculously, I just grew out of them. They never came back. And I surmised that it was something to do with hormones, that the body changed, and I just didn't get them anymore. And I had gone to the Diamond Headache Clinic in Chicago and got diagnosed with it. And they were giving me a drug called dihydroergotamine mesylate as an injectable that was a vasoconstrictor to deal with the problem. But I just want to tell the young lady that, you know, her husband can grow out of these and they can go away and never come back. So,
yeah, we don't know what the age of the husband is. John, thank you. Thank you for your experience.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Somebody from the 727 area code anonymously writes in, simisalin earache relief works to remove earwax. And I hope I pronounced that right. And let's see. Angie writes, I've been suffering from lower back pain for the past 6 months. I believe I herniated or have a bulging disc, and I keep re-injuring it. Would you recommend taking Ligaplexy by standard practice? Any other suggestions to get back on my feet and living again? Yoga strained it further. Any other exercises I should be doing, writes Angie.
Good question, Angie. I think a good muscle relaxant with some magnesium and some valerian and some passion flower would be good for that, maybe in the evening. And again, some boswellia, celoxacin, some curcumin for the back pain during the day, and then find a good chiropractor or a muscle activation technique practitioner to get that back pain moving along.
Okay, let's take some more phone calls, and we're going to go to Kim, who's on Davis Islands. Kim, thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Dr. Harvey. I do have a question, but I just want to, and I know we don't want to go back to the vaccine, but I agree 100% with Dr. Harvey on being cautious and get the facts on Operation Warp Speed. They part of it is the pharmaceutical companies are are immune from prosecution if there's anything going on. Dr. Harvey, I wanted to call for years about my psoriasis, and I when Rob said about 20 minutes ago there was an open line, I just thought I would call in. A few years ago, the dermatologist wanted to give me some kind of a shot that would have been $600 a month, which would have been really hard for me to afford to start with. But then I tested there's something tuberculosis in my that I couldn't even take it. So I just wondered if you had any advice for me.
Yes, psoriasis, immune system of the skin gone awry. It is something that's stimulating it when you make those patches. Sometimes it can be toxins. I had a patient who had small patch psoriasis called gutate psoriasis for many, many, many years. It took 10 years to chelate the mercury out of his system. But once we got his mercury down to close to zero, his psoriasis went away.
Oh.
I can't say that you have mercury, but that's something to check on. And
my mother was sent from Southern Indiana when she graduated from high school at 1942 because her psoriasis was so bad and they couldn't clear it up there. And she went to Miami and with sun and salt water, they cured. And I never thought I had little patches on my elbow. But when my uncle got sick, I went up there for a couple of years and now I just have it and can't get rid of it. So it might be something like you're saying from the
environmental toxin.
Yeah,
something in the environment you escaped. So, yeah, you might want to see a functional doctor to get deeper testing for mercury and maybe pesticides and other toxins that might be triggering this.
Oh, that's a great idea. What kind of doctor?
Functional medicine.
Functional medicine. Is that like you? Are you a functional medicine doctor?
Yes, yes. And we're the guys that dive deep and look for these kind of things.
Okay, well, let me go off the air. Thank you for your time.
All right, Kim,
thank you.
Well, we've answered more than a dozen calls and emails, and we have two or three dozen waiting in the wings.
Wow.
Brian writes this. He says, this is a stupid question, but I'm just curious. Is it safe or even possible to take two different COVID-19 vaccines for ultimate protection? For example, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is said to protect 85% against serious COVID illnesses and 100% protection against dying from COVID. Could a person take this in combo with either the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines, which have an overall 95% efficacy rate?
Actually, no, you couldn't, because no one in this current situation is going to give you a second vaccine, so it's not available. Interesting concept, though. The differences in efficacy are simply in the delivery. So the AstraZeneca seems to be the lowest efficacious, so it's not delivering this thing very well with the monkey virus. The Johnson & Johnson is delivering it pretty well with the human virus. The thing they're delivering, though, is still the same mRNA production of COVID spike protein. And so all of them are going to get you COVID spike protein so you can get immunity. The reason AstraZeneca is lower is because it's not getting it effectively into the cell to make enough spike protein, I believe. That's probably it. It's probably not generating enough of the antigen to create the antibody response as compared with the other ones.
All right, so let's take another phone call, and we're going to go to the person holding the longest. That's Betty in Sarasota. Betty, thank you for calling. What would you like to ask Dr. Fred?
My pleasure. Thank you both. Dr. Harvey, my daughter has been taking Adderall, and I don't know if this is your forte, but probably is, since most things seem to be. And she's been claiming for many, many years now that she can't focus without it, she can't study without it, and I'm just very concerned. I've been concerned for many years. She's still taking, she's 23, and I just don't understand how many, you know, young kids have been taking all these meds, you know, Vyvanse and Concerta. All her friends have been doing this since high school days, and it's really shocking. I'm wondering if there's anything else you recommend. Is there a good way to wean her off this drug while giving her the so-called focus ability?
Great question. It's really unfortunate that I have witnessed the rapid but a constant upsurge in use of these medications in children. From my perspective, diagnosed with something, labeled with something that isn't really necessarily a disease, because there are no specific disease markers, tests, anything we can do to show that it is, other than ask people questions and say they fit a behavior pattern. Whereas I see people with gluten sensitivity, high levels of pesticides, low levels of certain nutrients, low levels of omega-3 fatty acids, things like that, that will actually cause the symptoms that would be labeled as ADHD. And then when they go on the ADHD meds, they get hardwired for pharmaceuticals that drive the system a certain way. So coming off of it makes it very difficult, because they're from a young age hardwired into a need for a pharmaceutical. However, with good focus on the causes and looking for things to turn over, like gluten sensitivity, things like that, and at the same time assessing the gut, because the gut is where 70% of the neurotransmitters are made, and also then using neurotransmitter testing to balance the symphony of the neurotransmitters, the serotonin, the dopamine, the epinephrine, norepinephrine, so that everything works more in harmony, we can get people off of those medications. It takes time because they've been hardwired into them.
Wow.
Okay, Betty, thanks. We're out of time. Thank you, Betty.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Well, Fred, thank you. We'll hear from you in 2 weeks.
I would love to.
Okay.
Thanks a lot,
we didn't get to all the questions, unfortunately. But thanks, Fred, for your time. Dr. Fred Harvey has been here for the last hour. He's an MD, and he practices in Sarasota, and he's been volunteering his time here at WMNF for several years, hosting the health and nutrition program here on WMNF in Tampa. And we're about to get the latest news from NPR. Thanks to Frank Knox. He's been our phone producer today. Coming up a week from today, in this time slot,